Hello, hello, and welcome to The Thin Blue Mind. Each week we will be looking at current policing issues and topics within the UK. Our regular panel consists of Steve Bradshaw, who is a TV and theatre actor, Richard Horton, author, and me, Dave Thomas, broadcaster. What we all have in common is over 80 years of combined police service. Now retired, we will be providing opinion and insights from the unique position of having been there and done it. Steve spent the majority of his service on firearms before being promoted to inspector, where he was a force incident manager. Richard was a career detective before going back into uniform as a response sergeant. Myself, I spent the majority of my service on the Rhodes Policing Unit before going into CID and Child Protection. You may not agree with everything we say, but we will make you think. The Thin Blue Mind with Bradshaw, Horton and Thomas. Policing insights and opinion. Well, hello, hello, and welcome to The Thin Blue Mind. 2022 has been a year of change and struggle. There's been a war in Ukraine, a global financial and energy crisis, the remnants of the COVID restrictions, been through three prime ministers, Duke of York settled out of court for his troubles that he was going through. And after 6 years, Nazanin Zaghari Ratcliffe returned home from an Iranian jail. The Suri Gray report came out into the government minister's conduct during lockdown. Johnny Depp, Amber Heard debacle, Queen's Platinum Jubilee, who can forget Paddington Bear. Temperatures soared past 40 degrees for the first time. England's women's football team won the European Championship. And on the 8th of September, Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II passed away. The economy tanked, inflation soared, the World Cup in Qatar, Harry and Meghan, nuclear fusion, to name but a few. So 2022 was quite a year. Meanwhile, back in the Thin Blue Mind studio, whilst all that little lot was going on, we burst onto the scene with our first podcast on the 17th of April. Since then, we've looked at social media and its impact on the police, stop and search, the race action plan, police recruitment, police right to strike, special measures, trial by jury, the low conviction rates of rape, routine arming of the police, HMIC FRS report, police pursuits, police and crime commissioners, firearms incidents, prisons, the death penalty and bad practice within the police, and the Police and Criminal Evidence Act. And we've also looked at well-being within the police and leadership. So we've covered a hell of a lot in 6 months. So guys, what are your standout points for 2022?
Well, I think that there's been a noticeable change over the year. In some parts, you can actually feel it happening at the time. And I think some of it is down to the fact that we have had such a turbulent time regarding leadership. And I don't just mean leadership in the police, but leadership in general, and that being the change of prime ministers. I think the work that have gone on, forces being in special measures, the fact that we're trying to do everything for everybody, and it clearly isn't working. And I think this current government, for as long as it may be, is behind the chief constables who want to get back to basics. And we did mention it a few times in our podcast. And in many ways, there's been a lurch to the right in the fact of they want a bit more robust policing. They want us to be come down heavy on those that deserve it. And I think that's out of step, personally, with the College of Policing, who still remain left of centre. So I think the next, looking ahead, the next 12 months is going to be a bit of a fight, bit of a clashing of heads between the diktat from the government coming down through the leaders and the support that the government, the Home Office, is giving to leaders such as the Greater Manchester Chief Constable, the Lancashire Chief Constable and Lancashire Police and Crime Commissioner, Andrew Snowden, who are back on the drive of, you look smart, you look like a police officer, and we do police officer things.
For myself, I have a much more gloomy vision of what's coming. When we look at the uplift, that's faltering and failing. The Met is saying we're not going to meet our uplift targets for recruiting further police officers because we're already at the bottom of the barrel. There's nobody else coming to us that wants to be in the cops, and we're not going to make the target. Simple as that. When we look at this high watermark of graduate entry and the College of Police, that seems to have been ditched largely to try and keep the recruit to try and get into that recruitment total. It's anecdotal, but as some of you will know, I work in a little local Sainsbury's. And the little local Sainsbury's where I live have quite a lot of cops that come and do bits of shopping while I'm there on the tills, and we talk. And people that I've supervised, people that I know well, they're into the shop, and they're saying, you picked your right time for leaving, Richard, because it hasn't got any better. The demand is still crucifying at CID and at response. Stuff that would be proactive resources, going out proactively policing, are just being thrown back into the response pool just to keep the numbers up and to keep things going. CID is brutal in the amount of work it's having to take on, even though there's that well-known thing that CID will try and keep jobs away. Well, that's always been the case, but now there's a reason. It's because their detectives are at what you call in river terms, bank full load. You can't get any more water in the river channel. It's full. I don't see that getting any better because the recruitment isn't going to come and save us. We say that so much of our time is spent absorbing demand from other agencies that don't provide a 24/7 365 service. I don't see anything coming down the lines that's going to change that. So whilst we may make interesting noises about we're not going to do your out-of-hours demand, what actually happens when the suicidal person is there on the bridge and there is nobody, we end up fulfilling that demand.
That's really interesting you say that, and I agree with both of you. I do think there has been a recognition that the police can't do anything. Fine words. But I also accept that is anything being done to assist that? Here's an interesting thing. The Birmingham University did a police study, the challenges facing the police, and they looked at all the various aspects of policing, and they saw a drop in recorded crime, phenomenal increase in cybercrime, background of austerity where the criminal justice system has been asked to do more with less, emerging political instability, domestic violence, identifying the triggers, examining youth offending and breaking the cycle of reoffending. Now, none of that is a surprise to any of us, is it?
Not even slightly, no.
But here's the rub. That study was 2016. Nothing has changed.
No. If you go through 10 or 12 years of planned austerity in public services, and part of that plan is that the police will provide some sort of backstop for things being missing elsewhere, you can't stop the police from being the backstop until you put the missing stuff back, and the missing stuff's not going back, if you see what I mean. I think we're stuck with it, and I think despite the brave words from chief constables and police and crime commissioners about managing our demand, that's non-crime demand, that's non-public order demand, we are stuck with it.
And again, it comes down to money and who can do what, because no one's got any money anymore.
Nope.
So everyone's trying to, even within the police, you're kind of pinching off each other's departments a little bit, aren't you, to try and make your area of business work.
It's robbing Peter and robbing Paul.
The uplift, for example, is it true that get people in for the uplift? You've got to get people in by this date and the funding ends. So therefore, we're getting all these people in. Some great people coming in, I would suggest, but what about all the rest of them? And, you know, are people suitably vetted? What are the backlogs regarding vetting? Is vetting catching up with people who've been in the job for 6 months? This is what I've heard, and this might not be right. If someone starts in the cops as part of this uplift program where we get extra funding for it, yeah, and then they get binned, that funding for that space carries on. So the force gets the full allocation of that funding for their training.
But they're not spending it.
And is it
them.
10 years funding?
I don't know.
So you could bin somebody within the first 6 months and you still get all that extra funding.
Well, that would be very useful for things. I think part of this, and we talk about the recruitment and stuff, we may be seeing that drop off and eventual loss in confidence in the College of Police to do things around policing. One thing that filled my withered grey heart with joy was to see the forced abandonment of graduate-only entry. That was something, the College of Police almost made that a hill to die on. They were so strong and so forthright. No, there'll be nothing else but various graduate paths to joining police.
It was the New Testament, wasn't it?
It really was. And now they are the voice crying in the wilderness because the facts of the situation have gone against them and they haven't been able to hold that line. Hooray for me, because I've always said policing is a broad church and we need a broad church of acceptable. The umbrella of acceptable policing standards is big, and they were just having a little parasol.
Well, I think they were so detached from the work of the average cop and the immediate supervisor.
Oh, yeah.
It was all the wishful thinking. Wouldn't it be great if we had all this blue sky thinking stuff?
Yes.
When ultimately we're struggling to get to grade ones.
Correct.
Help us get to grade ones. Come apply that blue sky thinking help us to get to Grey once tomorrow.
Well, I feel the green barrow is coming out a little bit, but it's,
no,
it's a good point you make, and it brings me back to something that I heard the other day was about the NHS. Obviously, there's a big strike at the moment with the nurses. Perhaps we'll talk about that a bit later on. But it's not just about pay. It's about the lack of nurses and resources. And I heard something the other day, which absolutely nearly made me fall off my chair, to be honest with you. The NHS spends £500 million a year in agency staff to fill the gaps because they don't have enough nurses. So who are they filling the gaps with but registered nurses? So then you make the conclusion of, well, why don't they employ the nurses that are being provided by the agencies directly into the NHS? And one of the doctors who had been interviewed said that the agency staff, when they finish their shift at whenever, go home. There is no paperwork to do. The system does not get in the way of them doing their job. And that's why a lot of the agency nurses refuse to work for the NHS. For a bit like the police, where the system actually overtakes the reason it's there for. And you become a slave to the system, I suppose.
We have some agency staff now in policing, I guess, down the civilian investigator side of things. It started to happen there. Because we can't recruit any cheaper, I doubt it, but we can't recruit, we haven't got the numbers, but we've got some budget somehow to bring in agency people. I know I get green barrow about the College of Policing, but for my money, every chief constable, every police and crime commissioner should look upon any pronouncements out of that place with extreme scepticism, because they're not helpful. They haven't been helpful since the inception.
And I'll go back to what we said a few podcasts ago. They're saying that the smell of cannabis isn't suitable for a stop search. But it is. Yes. I've now lost respect for them. Credibility has gone down, etc. And it's all blue sky thinking. It's all, holistic, left of centre kind of wish-wash.
I don't mind where they come from politically. I really don't. But I do care where they come from operationally.
Okay, well, let's move on.
Yeah. No, it's true, but it never... No, since day one, that has been looking to be...
Oh, I'm sorry about this.
No, sorry. Since day one, it is looking to be a representative body for policing, a membership body for policing, a college of policing. And from day one, it has never been that, and it never will be.
Never represented me.
I'm going to have to get a buzzer. Let's not forget, we had a new Met Commissioner, Mark Rowley, after the previous Commissioner, Cressida Dick, resigned. I put that word resigned in
brackets. Forced out.
How do we think he's doing?
Well, he's managed to keep his head down. He's appointed a decent deputy as well. Mm-hmm. Well, there's a decent deputy been appointed, Lynn Owens, who seems to be doing well. I think he's not making too many public pronouncements. He's not doing anything controversial.
I think he was stumbling to find his way initially, wasn't he, on the PR side of things?
Yeah, but is it better? I'm not sure. We're still getting large numbers of people being stabbed to death down in the metropolis. There's still crime, social disorder issues. He's still struggling to come to terms with the tactics of disruption on climate protest and that sort of thing. That hasn't changed particularly.
That'll take a little bit of time, that though, won't it?
Not kidding.
And like I say, is there not the arm of the Mayor of London up his back a little bit? The recent grilling, shall I say, of the mayor in front of the assembly members was
go well for him, did it?
Well, it was a joy to see, wasn't it? A fine bit of television.
He's still there. And the message, I guess, is, as the same as it always has been with police and crime commissioners versus chief constables, is if it comes to hey, boys, hey, the police and crime commissioner wins. The chief constable tends to go.
I think whatever you say about the current administration, government, their words seem to show that they are more on board with the police than perhaps previous administrations have been. So that could be a problem for the Mayor of London.
When you say more on board, do you mean...
Well, they're saying the right things, but whether they're actually doing the right
things. As in policing is a little bit right of centre, and therefore they're in line.
Well, the new Home Secretary has been quite vociferous, hasn't she, in her views of certain problems that this country face.
And she may well be doing that, but what they're not saying is, actually, here's some more money for policing. Lots of do this, do that, do this, do that. We have these expectations. Yeah, great. Okay. You're punting those expectations into a service that has been sold hope for the best part of a decade. Can't be selling hope into us anymore because we don't believe it. We don't believe there's a decent pay rise or good numbers around the corner. We're just going to keep on being starved of resources and giving everybody else's surplus demand. So for me, the government can say what it wants. It's just words. You need to back it up with cold, hard cash And actually some idea of what you want policing to do. And we talk about the back to basics, but is the government doing anything to help us manage that surplus demand? No, not at all. We've got the uplift, which is faltering, and that's about it.
I think that's a figure fudging exercise as well in many ways. And the demands that it's putting on the new entrants coming through, and the fact that they're getting paid pittance to come in. I'd like to see, and it's easy for me to say because I've retired, it's not the whole of police service that needs a pay rise. It's the 0 to 2 year constable.
Yeah.
Make it appealing. But get people who are coming out of university, the bright new things, make it appealing for them to come in.
The issue with that, and while spotted coming downstream, is the policing promotion ladder, it gets really steep after sergeant. And the bright young things out of university may be career-minded.
Yeah.
But there are a very limited number of spots for them further up the ladder, and limited lateral developments as well.
Yeah, what I'm saying is the bright new thing, the bright young thing that are coming through, get them PC level, DC level, child sexual exploitation, violence against women, you know, all the different areas of CID, which you two know and I don't, about this is where we need the key new
stick
people.
Stick your best and brightest there.
Right, I think these two have forgotten it's a review of 2022, haven't they?
Well, no. You're probably right. We're straight into the job screwed mode. And
no, well, these are the main things that have been through the year,
agreed,
haven't they?
Agreed.
About uplift, the College of Policing, and all that kind of the more strategic themes, aren't they?
And on recruitment, we have the brain drain. It's anecdotal, but two of the people that I've spoken to at my little Sainsbury's out in Nether Nowhere have been long service detectives, and both are saying, I have 2 years to go, I have 4 years to go, I'm counting the days, I'd go now if I could. And both are effective, enthusiastic, keen, motivated officers that I've supervised and known to be really good, and they're at the end of their tether. And if they didn't need the money, they would give in policing tomorrow. That's horribly sad.
Okay, well, something else I've noticed in the last 3 months has been kind of a news vacuum on police compared to how it was in the previous two-thirds of the year. And obviously, there's been a lot of newsworthy stuff going on, which I mentioned into the introduction. And normally the press will be covering how police officers committed crimes, have been charged with this, that and the other, stop and search, all the rest of it, which seems to have gone quiet. I don't think that the situation has changed or we've got better in those short 3 months. It was just purely a news vacuum.
Less cops are getting locked up, is that what you're saying, in the last 3 months?
I think the last...
Well, I think there's less reporting of it.
The last big thing we had was, why are the police allowing people to handcuff themselves to gantries over the M25, and why is the South grinding to a halt, and why don't the police just throw a lasso around them? You know, all the Daily Mail-y type, whaley stuff. That was the last controversy I can remember in policing in 2022, and it was around policing of protests. And, of course, the College of Policing are now busy working on their new authorised professional practice for protest policing. That'll be due out just after the protest season starts, probably next year.
The reason I mention it is, obviously, the country's gripped in a wave of national strikes at the moment, including rail workers, nurses, ambulance staff, post office workers, to name a few. We covered the police right to strike, or lack of right to strike previously. But what stood out for me, which I've not seen before, is the vilification of some of these workers that only last year, let's take the nurses, were being applauded for, literally, and now they're being blamed for the deaths in the NHS. I would suggest that it's the lack of funding for the last 10 years or so that's causing the deaths of people in the NHS. And there's been this shift, hasn't there, from hero to villain.
There has, and it's the cliche, your applause at the front door will not stop me having to go to the food bank. 10 years of austerity, it's going to leave its mark. And when you talk to nurses and you hear nurses' leaders talking, they've got the same over-demand, low-capacity issues at the front end around A&E and on the acute wards that we have in policing. There's not enough people to do the job, not enough resources to do the job. There's a wonderful interview with a convener for one of the Scottish nursing areas saying, I'd gone into a talk about the strike with the local management. They were a bit table thumpy and saying, you must have these minimum numbers of nurses on the wards or otherwise it'll all be terrible. And he just said, yeah, I agree straight away. And as I was leaving, the head of the trust was, we thought you'd fight us more on the minimum standards, minimum numbers. He said, no, no problem. Your minimum numbers are higher than the numbers that we're actually having to work with on the wards at the moment. So
what you've effectively given me there is extra staff.
Exactly right. Yeah. And the ability to say, we're working with less than they think is the minimum safe number. And that's what they're giving us to work with.
That's a bit alarming that they don't know what's actually happening on the ground floor.
It's not surprising, though.
No. Well, there's an old saying in acting that exposure doesn't pay the rent. And it's the same thing as clapping for the nurses. It doesn't put food on the table. When you've got Nadeem Zahawi going on mainstream media calling Mick Lynch the Grinch of Christmas.
Yes.
It's an obvious...
It's comedy politics.
It's an obvious attempt to turn the spotlight onto the actual workers.
Well, it's a refusal to negotiate, yet sniping from the sidelines, isn't it?
That's exactly. That's been a characteristic of policing as well. When it's come to our pay settlements, the recommended pay settlements and what we've actually got, and then sniping from the sidelines.
Well, I remember that, you know, crying wolf, it does nobody any good, that famous line.
At the same time as it was, I will always support you, I will always back you up, Theresa May. Yeah, really?
She's in opposition then.
Good point.
Isn't she? That strong might point have had well something made. To do with it, I don't know.
It's fair to say, though, isn't it? These strikes are affecting everybody at the moment. And I do think that society's become a little bit soft. It's easy to support a course when it's not on your doorstep. Well, now it is, and people don't like it.
They don't. I personally support all those public service strikes, because if the police could strike, we'd be striking.
I think you're right, we would be.
Yeah, we'd be very, very close to it, I think. The only thing that would probably let us down is the return of the question to strike or not to strike. We'd be in danger of not hitting the minimum return level.
Yes.
For the strike vote. Because I think we had some vote a few years ago, and not enough votes went
in. Cast even to make make
a decision, because people are just too busy and people went delete on the email. I have been with my father this year in an A&E corridor for 12 hours before he was seen. The state, the infrastructure, the actual building, and it's not the people, because there were people flitting about all night and racing around and trying to juggle things. And I saw some A&E doctors do some incredible things over at Blackpool. But my dad was still led on a gurney in the corridor for 12 hours, and something has to change.
Well, I think, you know, my view of it is, if these people, the nurses, the police, ambulance, if they are that essential to the country that we're saying they shouldn't be striking, then shouldn't we be giving them a commensurate wage? It's as simple as that.
If you want some emblems for what has been the general attitude of government towards all public services in policing, there are two things you need to look at, I think. The first is the Police National Computer replacement, which should have been delivered years ago. And the second is the airwaves replacement, the walkie-talkie that us and the ambulance and the fire service use. Both Home Office projects, and both as well documented, hugely over budget and still on the distant horizon, and should have been here 5 years ago. Now, if you're serious about your public services, for example, having a communication system that they can all use, that is agile, that is able to use data in the clever ways you can use data on your own mobile phone these days, and you're late on delivering it, and there's still no effective plan for trying to get it delivered. If you look at something as fundamental as the Police National Computer, where we store all the records on people that have come, you know, they've got criminal records, that have got driving bans, stolen vehicles, stolen plan, all the stuff that we should be recording on a national database, should have been replaced, because the old system, God help us, is virtually running on valves. Still not replaced, still a distant horizon. Now, if you were serious about it in government, if you were serious about getting policing and public safety right, even if you were running down the police numbers, you would still get that underlying framework of technology that us and the other services need to work effectively right. And it ain't right. It's late, it's over budget, and it's still not really coming. This is terrible, terrible management.
We've had this technology, as in we have had this technology, for years.
Yes.
For years and years. You know, WhatsApp, Telegram, we get stuff sent. You know, I could voice call Australia now,
yes,
and have a conversation encrypted.
Yes.
And it won't go through a cellular tower. It'll go through the internet. Yeah. And it'll be on 4G, yeah, using my phone. But
exactly,
we just can't seem to do it with an ESN network.
And there's lots of promises made and lots of planning done and lots of non-delivery.
And lots of money spent.
Oh, huge amounts of money spent. And a chunk of it in airwaves, keeping the old system running long past its anticipated service life.
Well, that's what you get with the pay-as-you-go system, because that's what it is, isn't it?
Yes.
You press the button, you talk, and a few pence comes off the bill.
Well, that very nicely brings us on to the future, I suppose, of the old saying, isn't it? Let the tears of this year be be the rain to water the seeds of next. There was a strategic review. I was trouble staying strategic. And the HMIC FRS report. And they identified three areas for the future of policing. So the first one was capacity. And that's just purely down to the range and complexity of demand. Capability. The police service, as we've just talked about, does not have the technical resources to meet that demand. And then there's the organisational view. There's 43 police forces. They still lack info sharing. They've got different systems. And it's not a lack of will. It's they just need technical managers that are experts in the field to manage this and it not to be a project given to a chief inspector who, say, was very good at firearms but knows nothing about computers. The police are chronic for doing things like that.
Yeah, we are. We are. It's a terrible failing. It's a terrible failing that we have. Go and make yourself a sort of add water for instance expert in whatever field this is, chief inspector or inspector that wants a third pip. Classically.
Yeah, and I think that's the downfall of the rank system, isn't it? Because you're not a boss in the organisation unless you've got the rank.
And the other thing is, it's not, you know, the police in the past have employed experts or in their field to look at, let's say, shift patterns or something like that. But then the police have said, well, we don't really like what you've just told us.
Absolutely.
So we'll put your report in the bottom drawer. They've got to be open, the police. They've got to be open to change and they've got to move quick.
I think capacity and capability, for me, when you boil all that down, it's more money, unfortunately.
But it's money well spent.
Yes, you can rearrange the limited resources you've got to try and do the best you've got. And I think we're probably near the end of that process now. I don't think we can do a lot more with what we've got. So we need more. The last bit, the reorganisation, do we need 40-odd different police services? We probably don't, and I think we'll have a movement towards that aligning more into regional police services. That's my feeling, because the Home Office, they'll see, we can get rid of some duplicated costs here. And once they start seeing another saving that they might scrunch out of policing, then that becomes, for me, an inevitable process with the Home Office that we've got at the moment.
Some forces, I think it lends quite nicely to, that they can merge some resources, and they do it a lot with specialist resources like armed response and stuff, where they will go across borders.
Yes.
Tri-service forces for delivering specialist firearms command training or resources. You know, the old break glass if needed, but we don't really need you all the time.
Yes.
But if you look at, say, the Northwest region, where Lancashire, Cumbria, GMP, Merseyside, North Wales, there's some differing police styles and areas and populations there, aren't you? We're talking some big cities along with some quite rural areas. So it would take a bit of a rethink.
We can perhaps learn some lessons out of Police Scotland.
I think Police Scotland can learn some lessons out of Police Scotland.
And hopefully does. But if we let Police Scotland make those bedding in mistakes and adjustments and policing some intensely urban areas and whole loads of open countryside, because for the Northwest group, that's kind of what we're looking at.
Well, let's just open the communication channels between forces for a start. I mean, I remember going to a burglary once when I was on traffic.
Hang on, you went to a burglary when you were on traffic.
I was all things to all people.
The car crashed into the house.
Yeah.
And it was on the border. I can't remember. It was in Yorkshire, but just over Yorkshire, but it was near Cumbria as well. So I went and we got there on scene and there was me, there was a cop from Cumbria and there was a cop from Yorkshire and we all had a good laugh about it. But nobody knew each other. We didn't know we were attending. You know, it was just a surprise to find us. I thought I'd be the only one there. The guy from Cumbria thought he'd be the only one there and likewise for Yorkshire. So and that sort of kind of made me realise that communications, we've got to be better than this, surely. We've talked about the 43 forces, but let's sort out our relationship with policing the pavement. Let's get that right first and work from the bottom up.
Small round of applause from the Richard Horton corner of the room on that. Absolutely right. Those basics, when people pick up the phone and dial the non-emergency or the emergency police number and have a legitimate reason for service that's around crime, disorder, and also actually public safety, which we do a lot of. Let's get it so that we're not deferring the grade three stuff for as long as possible. Let's get it so we're actually getting to things and also being present there, not particularly directed to do anything, but being present and visible in the community and providing that visible policing.
Proactive work.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that's where we're lost. We're still fire brigading policing, aren't we? And like you said, Dave, if we get it correct on the streets, and people pick up the phone and say help, and we go. It's that basic. Get that right, and then we can start adding stuff.
Practice what's put is what puts you on the front foot.
But to caveat that, when people do shout help, we should also be saying, well, actually, this isn't a crime. This isn't an immediate threat to life. You need to contact this service. I think we need to be quite stern on that.
That is true, but I can give you one that I have some knowledge of recently. Young person having a mental health crisis in a public place. The first call that this person's friends made was to their mental health crisis team. Couldn't even get through. Were on hold for half an hour until the phone cut off. And ended up ringing an ambulance. And the ambulance got the call, this young person is having a crisis, becoming a little bit violent. The ambulance rang the police, because the ambulance didn't want their crew to be turning up to potential violence. The right person to deal with that would have been a mental health crisis team that knew that person, had their records available, had a history of involvement with them, and knew the background to it all. And it ended up via the ambulance with the police because the right service could not be contacted and was not available.
We should bill. I know this has probably been muted before and it's nothing new. But if that happens and we go and it's someone in crisis because we're the state and the state has obligations under Article 2, don't we? We should bill the relevant authority.
Whether they pay or not.
But that's where it needs government or statute kind of.
It needs to be that it's more painful for them not to provide the service and default to the police, that it's less painful to provide it themselves. And yeah, finance is one of the pains that we can put on them.
My thoughts for next year are, I think the uplift will materialise, as in we will see the product of the uplift seed. I know of some good people who have gone into that system and entered into what some may say is a dysfunctional system. When you're one student of 140 in one class because of the uplift, and the infrastructure around the uplift just wasn't there because we've not had new recruits for years, so the training departments in that area have lost people, lost skill. It's like any area of policing, you lose that skill, it's going to take a long time to come back. To have 140 people in a class is going to have its own dividends. And I really do hope it works. The direct entry, detective schemes, I really do hope that works. And I think we will, this time next year, be reviewing those sorts of programmes and saying, how's it going so far? Because we'll have people who have been on the street for 12 months at that point.
I hope, I don't share your optimism, but I really hope that that's what happens. I'm looking at the dropout rates from that are currently quite high. I'm looking at the dropout rates and the resignation rates further down the line in service.
Yeah,
I think that will bite us.
And the other thing I think is going to be a big thing next year is performance targets. I think the Reds and Greens are going to come back with a vengeance. And do we need them to make sure that we go to burglaries and stuff like that? We just need good supervisors, but we've been through that before. I think this time next year, we will be looking at the standard of the recruitment and performance figures and the Reds and Greens and the quarterly performance reviews. And
of course, a lot will depend on future administrations of this government. That's far from certain. Well, at the moment, with 2024 coming up with an election. Well, that's it for 2022. I'm not sure if it was a review or a rant. I'm not sure I feel better. Steve's beard's just got that little bit longer since we started recording.
Yeah.
So, you let yourself go over Christmas or something?
Quite right.
I always let myself. I always grow a beard. You never know what role you're going to get asked.
Oh, that's true.
You can always shave it off, but you can't grow it quickly.
Yeah, and from the Noah Bird Appreciation Club, we commence in the 23rd of January.
Here we go.
Yes.
We commence in the 23rd of January. You'll laugh your heads off because I'm in an interview scene with on Coronation Street.
Splendid.
With little Max.
Well, I hope you get it right.
Well, I'm with Dear Swain, so she always gets it right. Cool. And A&E doctor in Emmerdale. So
splendid.
That's the 8th of February. So put them in your diaries, everyone.
Hands of a surgeon. Researching.
Very good.
Like I say, that's it. We have a little announcement to make as well. We put it on Twitter, but obviously we've been doing these podcasts for 6 months now. We always said that there was two caveats to it. Either we became irrelevant or we ran out of stuff to talk about. I think we're still relevant for the time being at least. But certainly we've covered everything we want to cover. So for 2023, the podcast won't be out on a weekly basis, but we will be putting a podcast out when something of significance comes into the media or that we learn about that we feel needs a bit of an angle from three retired, angry, bored
I'm not bored.
It's to help your blood pressure, Richard.
That's
It's all that baking your loaves.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. The piece of the oven.
So anyway, that's it for 2022. Have a great 2023 and take care.
Yeah, take care, folks.
Bye.
The Thin Blue Mind with Bradshaw, Horton and Thomas. Policing insights and opinion.
Well, that's it for this week. Thank you for joining us. This podcast is in partnership with Policing TV, the leading policing media channel. So until the next time and the next podcast, take care.